It's Anime Pacific, episode 89.
That's mighty exciting, Alex, but I'm afraid Dan Scaresbrook could not be here today, so I'm your temporary co-host, Scotty McScottish.
Yes, it's Eeper.
No, that's a Scottish accent.
That was a Scottish accent? That's terrible. You sounded like the Lucky Charms
guy. I'm sorry, but that was a perfect Scottish accent.
No, you need more of a burr.
No, that's too cliched. A real Scotsman speaks like this, Alex. Irish is different. It's a top of the morning to you. What are you doing? Why are you making fun of me?
What?
You stupid Uzbek.
You need to stick to your Aussie... You should just stick to your natural Aussie accent and not the phony one you put on.
Your true Aussie accent.
Go ahead.
Hello, everyone.
Ask for a Foster's.
Right, yes. Alex is trying to let everyone believe that at the end of each show.
He puts on this fake posh accent in order to.
That is sullying my name because, no. That's not how I speak. Alex is trying to imply
Come on, let's,
that at
let's
the end,
hear the true Aussie accent. Let's go.
Okay. Hello, I am Dane Scaresbrook.
That is not the true Aussie accent. I can't do accents.
Good day, eh?
But it would be.
I'm from
That's
Australia,
right.
That's eh?
Good day. It would be. Good day. I can't do accents like you. I'm not a linguist. But it would be something like you have to say good day and then inquire about dingoes eating babies
Fosters. I did try saying good day once about 10 years ago and got made fun of for about a week because it just sounded so phony coming from my mouth. Good day.
Say good day, mate.
Alex probably
good day,
thinks
mate.
He knows, but you're trying to give the impression that at the end of each show I'm like, oh, well, that was a bloody good show, Alex, wasn't it?
That's it. See, he let it slip.
Yes,
there we go.
That's right, I let it slip. and just like you...
Don't believe it, I'm right.
Just like you let your Ukrainian accent slip in between episodes. Well, that was a very really good episode,
accent.
Alex. I mean, Dane, sorry. Very good.
That's not bad. You sound like Chekhov.
That's actually more of a Polish accent, because apparently the Polish use the W instead of the V, where Russians will say V. Vodka, for example. They don't call it vodka, but that's a huge...
Vodka, yeah.
...digression.
Well, you know, the Poland occupied like half of the Ukraine for after World War II. Or before, I'm sorry, between World War I and World War II, was like occupied by Poland. It was part of Poland.
Yes.
So when my grandmother... who grew up in, like, Ukraine, but it was, like, the Polish were in charge. So she learned Polish in school. So she speaks Polish, Ukrainian,
Russian. Oh, why didn't she help me translate Weeds
and
Men?
English.
Oh, man. I spent, like, a year.
She's like, 95.
Does it matter?
She can't. She's not going to, you know, and she's busy watching General Hospital. She doesn't know how to translate.
Well, Matlock isn't on anymore, so I suppose she'll have to watch General Hospital. So that is terribly insulting. More people liking Matt.
It is. Especially now that she's in the hospital. And,
oh, is she?
Suffering and not going to last much longer,
really?
Probably. Oh, it's very unfortunate. Well, she's 95.
Yeah, I mean, because
so
she...
Her health isn't...
From last I heard, she,
good.
You know, was always...
She was a bit of a firecracker.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's very, like, spritey, always getting around. But now, like, she spent, like since... since Christmas, I guess she's been in Winnipeg, which is like the frozen tundra of Winnipeg, you know, with relatives, and apparently the whole family came down. They must have had food poisoning or something, and you know they had the runs, and you know everybody got caught it. I guess maybe it was the flu or something, and you know of course the rest of the family, they're fairly young, so they were fine. But my grandmother, you know, really got it too, and she's 95.
Well,
she can't.
That could really dehydrate you, and
well, that's her problem. She got really dehydrated, and I don't want to bore the audience with
no, go on.
Kind of gross details,
yes.
But she couldn't go to the washroom, and her hands got all sort of. She was perspiring like crazy. Her hands were like really cold and clammy. So anyway, she's in the hospital now, and we're hoping she pulls through.
Well, I'll tell you,
You're 95 years old.
I had the same, well, not food poisoning, but there was my grandmother's sister, who's like 90 something also, she was, you know, at death's door. Everyone's like, okay, well, you better say goodbye to her, or, you know, say what you need to say. And she's like, okay, I'm ready. And then she got better. And that was like 5 years ago, and she's almost 100. Yeah.
She's
just as surprised as anyone is, so you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the doctors always said, oh, your grandmother, you know, she's going to live to 100. And last time I saw her, which was back in the summer, it was like, oh, grandma, you're going to live to 100, you know, boy. And she's like, you know, that's not very long, you know, that's only 5 years. Like, yeah, well, when you put it that way, you know. And I guess, you know, I was looking through all these old photographs, you know, she grew up, you know, this is basically photos from the 1920s and 30s. She was growing up in, sort of Poland, Ukraine there. Her father was, my great-grandfather, he was a priest with the church there, the Orthodox
Church.
And Russian Orthodox, yeah. So, or Ukrainian Orthodox, I guess. The clergy still, you know, right at the time, I guess, was still had quite a bit of money, you know, so they were sort of a well-off.
Oh, yeah.
Well-off sort of family. So there's pictures of, like, her with the tennis courts and the, and then the backyard of the house they built, and you know, pictures of my grandmother in this bathing suit, and you know, it's sort of weird because, you know, now obviously, you know, 95-year-old woman, but back looking at a picture of her when she's, you know, 18, 19 in a pretty scandalous bathing suit for the time, it was like a, like, not like one of those ones from, like, not ones that, like, not like one of those burkas that went down to her ankles. It was like a swimsuit. You know, like a one piece sort of thing. And she was like, oh, my grandmother said that her grandmother saw these pictures and she was like scandalized, you know. You think about it, like, her grandmother, you know, would have been born like in the 1860s.
Yeah.
So it's sort of weird how she was telling me about her grandmother and sort of going back like 150 years just talking to her, and it's kind of interesting, eh?
Yeah, well, it's like, so, my great-grandfather who died ages ago, but this was a guy that just managed to dodge getting into World War One because he was a little bit too old, and I remember him, and there's pictures of him, you know, in the 1800s, and it's like, you know, the man from Snowy River. You know, all horses and big trench coats and the Cobra hats and stuff.
Well, yeah. Well, my grandma, boy, I mean, she, you know, lived through World War II in the Ukraine. So she saw the Germans, you know, invade, basically. And she saw the actual German troops coming through, storming in. And, you know, she said, you know, she was just saying, oh, boy, they were so so impressive. And they looked very, she thought they'd be invincible because they looked so... When they were marching, they looked so powerful, and there's such equipment she couldn't believe. She'd never seen stuff like this, the tanks and everything. You know, she couldn't believe it, that, oh, nobody's going to beat these guys. And then, you know, the Russians came through, and she said they were horrible. She even curses Russians, you know, to this day, you know.
Well, you know, that, horrible. And if you can, if you're interested, you can listen to www.dancarlin.com for the history one. They've got a three-part episode on the OS front there, which is... yeah, what you hear about it is just some of the worst stuff.
I think I sent you that link to that Dan.
Well, I've been
listening
to him for years, but
didn't I?
But
I used to listen to his political show, but it just got he's just a bit of a nutbag, actually. So he's like a complete libertarian.
Well, he always says he's nonpartisan.
He has this. Yeah, but that's baloney. He's essentially a libertarian. So he says he's nonpartisan, so he but by that he means he attacks the conservatives on their religious rights stuff. And he attacks the Democrats on the big government stuff. So he's a libertarian, you know, but it's his way of saying, oh, I'm nonpartisan. Well, he's a libertarian, you know, so he doesn't...
Right, yes. Well, but anyway, the history show is fantastic. And the one on the OS front, yeah, it's some of the most terrible stuff you can imagine. And some of the most terrible stuff is not just the warfare stuff, but the aftermath when the Russians sort of came back in and and started, you know, coming to Germany and you know, post OS Front stuff is some of the worst.
Yeah, well, you know, my grandparents there, you know, they fled to Canada, just, you know, when in the aftermath of the war, and you know, things were still chaotic, and basically they fled west to France, and then they took a ship to Canada from like Calais or something. Yeah. So anyway, boy, it's quite this exciting story. But anyway, some people are not excited about family history. Essentially, we know this show is probably going to come out almost a week late, actually. And we profusely apologize. We've had, like, lots of chances to record. We always get absorbed playing Europe Universalis Rome.
Yeah, yes, we do.
So, like, cause it's been Chinese New Year, so Dana's had the last week off, basically. And
yeah, but at the same time... on the weekend, which is when we usually record, I wasn't around at all because, you know, the Chinese New Year is huge here, and it's sort of the only time where everything in Hong Kong comes to a screeching halt.
Well, there's, and, yeah, there's that. You've been busy, but we have had, like, whenever you've been on, either the last few days, you said your throat wasn't so good, and so you, that was kind of like, oh, yeah, your throat's not good, let's play you roam.
Yeah, well, I'm mostly better.
Yeah, so yeah. It's recommended that game. They've patched it up, and it's quite fun. I don't know about single player, but multiplayer, it's a blast. Especially playing one of the smaller countries, you know. Like we, Macedonia, and you were Sparta, and
we're building our empires. That's right. Now I take over half the world.
That's right. So very exciting. Yeah.
I don't know if Sparta traditionally, historically, ever occupied Wales, but
that's right. You invaded Britain. That's pretty funny.
But yes, very good, very fun game, and as Alex said, very exciting, eh? And while we're on the subject of computer games, it's probably a bit too late to mention this now. But on Steam, Mountain Blade, not mountain as in MOUNT. AIN, but mount, as in, I would like to mount you, and Blade, was $5.
Yeah, I missed that.
And I didn't. Luckily, I got it, and I was playing it before, but someone accidentally gave me a pirated version, and when I discovered this, I was shocked and aghast, and I purchased the game immediately, but some of the mods on it, there are just so many mods. Okay, Mountain Blade, you know, for those of you that like, okay, let's have an anime connection here, Berserk, you know, a group of mercenaries, and you are basically the leader of a group of mercenaries in this sandbox land, and you go around and you do mercenary stuff. The key thing about this game is that it simulates horse combat so well, and, you know, you're in these huge battlefields, riding your horse, sort of slicing people down. And it's the only game I play where I'm riding this horse and I'm getting my sword ready to slice at an enemy soldier, and I'm actually, like, tilting in my chair to the right.
Yeah, we probably...
I always have a sword neck.
I think we talked about this show, that this game, like, at least probably 2 years ago now.
Yes. Well, it's been eternally... I mean, it finally got sort of completed... But it was around for years with a small community of people who... It was like shareware at the time, you know, you pay some money, get updates and stuff. But then it finally came out.
It was like basically a big beta test is what it was.
Yes. And Warband, its kind of expansion / sequel, is coming out soon. It's on Steam. I think it's only like $29.95. I'm definitely
well,
getting it.
All right. If it's the multi, I might be interested in that, the multiplayer. Now,
yeah, it's multiplayer. That's one of the big things, and you can get married.
But see, you're not really explaining the game very well. Essentially, in the vanilla game, you play like a kind of a chief, I guess it's sort of a chieftain, or I guess it depends on your tribe or something.
It's like Sid Meier's Pirates. You part of your character creation is the background. So you can be like, you know, a nomad, or you can be like a noble or a thief or a street urchin or something, and that dictates how you start the game. If you're a noble, you know, you got your little flag and everything, but or if you start off as an urchin, then you sort of choose allegiance to one of the king, one of the five kingdoms in the game, and eventually, you know, you'll get granted a title.
Yeah, I think best explanation, it's Sid Meier's Pirates, but on land. That's a brilliant explanation. And yeah, you sort of travel around this world, sieging castles and getting gold and getting more better equipment and then sieging more castles. Now for me, it's really fun for the first, this is what I found, it's fun for the first few hours. But then it gets repetitive and old, and I lost interest. Because it's like once you've sieged your first, you know, 10 castles, you know, that's about all there is to it. You know, nothing. It's
interesting you say that, because this is definitely a community that's supported by so many mods. One of them, I'll talk about the main one later. But one of them is called the Sword of Damocles, and that one is really interesting because it's set in the same land, but you are like some nobleman whose country was burnt to a crisp, and you bring your sort of elite soldiers there, and basically you come from a different continent where there's something akin to Rome. It's called like the Royal Legion or something like that, the Imperial Legion or something, which is coming to take over the whole land. So that gives you a time limit in which to you come to the land with just your horse and like 30 elite guys who are really, really, really strong, but eventually, of course, you know, attrition and stuff, they die. But you've got like a year before the Imperial Legion comes and attacks the whole continent that the game takes place on. So eventually, you know, you and every other kingdom faces a huge epic war with these people. And when that war is over, I guess either the game ends or you can retire. Just like Sid Meier's Pirates, you retire, and then, depending on your score, you know, you could become a duke, or you could become a beggar, or you could become a thief. But, anyway, are you still there?
I'm listening, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's a great mod, and it also expands on the game. You can actually become a king and give orders and build stuff, and
well,
it's really
essentially,
if
you like the Sid Meier's Pirates, then you'll like this game, basically. But just like Sid Meier's Pirates, yeah. I bailed on that after a few hours, too, because for me, it's just not my...
Sid Meier's Pirates is something that is eternally on my hard drive, because I guess it just depends.
See, really. I can't play, as much as I like, oh, open world. I have the same complaints with, you know, GTA, you know. As much as I sort of say, oh, I love open world, and I want to be able to do what I want and live my own life. I like that in theory, but when it comes to actually doing it, I unless it's very structured, I get bored, and then I lose interest and I fade off and start playing something else that has more of a narrative. You know, I need a narrative in my games, I think.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the difference between me and Alex's game, is because I love, you know, I love sort of just driving around in GTA and looking at the different streets and listening to the radio, and you know, I loved all the Elder Scrolls games.
Yeah, which are very, again, sort of same thing. I like that in theory. Like, oh, I want to live a new life in this other world, but when it comes down to it, unless something's pushing me along, I sort of lose interest. And I don't know why. I wish I could be like you and just get sucked in completely. But I think what it might be is there's too many sort of competing, like Dragon Age. I loved every minute, completed it, but I almost like all doing all the. I have a bit of a completionist streak. Like I have some sort of need in me to try and do every side mission and try to do every, like, I don't know why, but there's a part of me that says, okay, I have to do everything. So when you get a game with too many side missions, then I sort of end up, I get so much and I get overwhelmed sort of accepting all these quests, and I got, oh, it almost becomes like homework. I got 20 quests today. Oh my God, how am I going to finish all this stuff? And I sort of, oh, fuck it, I'll do it later. And then I never get around to doing it, you know? So I tried in Dragon Age, I tried to sort of limit myself and force myself, okay, I'm not going to accept every side quest, I'm not going to, you know, do everything I can. So I for example, you know, the Mages Collective, you know those guys, they give you quests, I only did a couple from them, you know. I heard about another guy on another podcast, another completionist, you know how when you go to the the dwarves, and you have to choose one house or the other house, like one side, like the noble or the prince, if you choose one or the other. And you know how to do, essentially, if you want to join the noble's house, you have to go fight in the arena. If you want to join the prince's, you have to do something else, I forget. And there's two different paths you take. This other guy is a completionist, like on another order of magnitude above me. So what he tried to do, he did one mission from one, then he'd go and do the other mission from the other guy and try to complete them all. For even though he didn't want to finally choose one or the other before completing everything for both paths. So yes. He ended up breaking the game because he you're not supposed to do that, right? So
yes.
He had to go back and start again. So
Just before I forget, there's a few other mods for this game, and one of them is Wild West one, which is definitely the most polished one. You set in a post Civil War Mexico and the U.S. and Comanche regions. And it's just so fun. And a Star Wars one. Now, Regan is the biggest Star Wars fan listening to the show, because he also is a defender of the prequels, much like myself. And anyway, let's not get into that, because then the podcast will go for 5 hours. There's a Star Wars mod. And the game works extremely well for the Mountain Blade formula, because you've got, instead of a map of Calderia where the gameplay takes place, you've got the sort of the Star Wars galaxy, and instead of villages and cities, you've got planets and moons. So you can work for the Hutts or independently, like a bounty hunter, or for the Empire, or for the Rebel Alliance. And it's just so fun. Replace horses with speeder bikes, replace swords with lightsabers.
Yeah. See, it's again
bows and arrows.
See, again, it sounds good in theory, but the gameplay is essentially this. The only thing that I probably prefer about it, because I was hopeless in the fighting. Like, I could not kill anybody. You know, riding around on that horse and trying to kill enemies, I was hopeless. I'd always miss and I'd always get killed, and especially the combat. You know, I was hopeless with the tactics. It was a mess. So at least with this, you have guns and it's more straightforward. But again, you're just sort of driving around, sieging, I guess in this case, planets. And you take over a city and you get some money, then you go to the next one. You do the, wash, rinse, and repeat. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's changed a bit since then. But anyway, it's everything I love about PC gaming. The fact that you've got such a game and you can tinker with it. Lots of people have tinkered with it. Just made something new. It's everything I love about PC gaming. Anyway, so Mountain Blade Warband is coming out March the 30th. I will be one of the first people in the whole galaxy to get that game.
Yeah, well, in March, the new Dragon Age expansion comes out. I'm really looking forward to that. Can't wait. It's looking up. You'll be able to continue with your character from the first game. And go on the new worlds with new companions. Everything I like about Dragon Age. And I've been playing Mass Effect also now. I finished Dragon Age, went back to Mass Effect, played Mass Effect 1, which, Dane, you go on about how it's a BioWare game.
Yep.
It's basically the sort of same formula. But Mass Effect, yeah, it is similar to Dragon Age. But I got to say, I finished Mass Effect 1. I'm on to Mass Effect 2 now. Mm-hmm. And I have to commend the Mass Effect people in one area, definitely, is that the world of Mass Effect is really interesting. It's got a lot of backstory. In fact, it might even be better than the Dragon Age world. Like Dragon Age is sort of generic fantasy. Although they have worked on developing the history of that. But you really get a sense of... You know, I talked about Steven Erikson, like probably several months ago, my new favorite fantasy author. Well, you know, if Steven Erikson were to do a science fiction game, develop a history of a universe, it would be like Mass Effect. What an epic! They got an epic backstory, going back, you know, 100,000 years, much like, you know, Steven Erikson's history of his world goes back, you know, 300,000 years. He's got it all plotted out. But same thing in Mass Effect with the rise and fall of civilizations, the different races, the aliens, the technology. It's all really well thought out. Really enjoyable.
I think Mass Effect, of all the games that have come out recently, that one is the most likely to get a movie, I've heard. Like, they're planning it.
I could see, because the actual story is good. Although, like, the guy, the shepherd, he's a bit of an asshat. Especially in the first one. They have fixed it a bit in the second one. But in the first one, like, it's not like Dragon. Everything else, by the way, the implementation of the actual game on the PC is a lot better than in Mass Effect. You know, Dragon Age is much better implementation than Mass Effect. But the actual backstory and the story in Mass Effect is better than in Dragon Age. You know, in Mass Effect, for example, like the dialogue trees. You know, a lot of these games are sort of similar thing. But, you know, in Dragon Age, you'd have, like, three different ways to approach a situation. You could try the brute force way.
Yep.
You could try sort of a middle road. Or you could try sort of a diplomatic, sort of Captain Picard-style solution, you know, diplomatic solution. But in Mass Effect, especially when you got the humans dealing with the Council, in the first game, you know, it's like option one is tell the aliens, oh, screw you. You know, option two is to say, well, you're completely wrong, and I'm right, and here's why. And option three is, you know, slam the door in their face. You know, like, one is more like outrageous than the next. Like, these are all stupid. I don't want to say any of this. There's no way to play, like, sort of the smart sort of diplomat option, which I tend to do in these games, at least from the first playthrough. Mm. You know, it's always, you're always like the, you know, the fathead asshole human. You know, he plays a jerk,
yeah,
basically, especially in the first game. In the second, they've improved that a bit, it's, you know, still not as good as Dragon Age, where you got three distinct different ways that you can, you know, go through a conversation, you know. But, and it's very console-y. Like, fuck. Like, it's worse than the first one. It, you know, I mean, they've got, I mean, I've got a keyboard and a mouse. I don't have a, I'm not using a gamepad. You know, adapt it. Like, in Dragon Age, well, they did it properly, where it's very well adapted for the keyboard and mouse, you know. But in this, it's very console-y. It's even worse. You got one button.
Well, one thing that pissed me off about Mass Effect 1 was that I actually outputted it to the TV and played it as you would a console game. And thus I plugged in my USB PC controller and it didn't work. You need an Xbox 360 controller or no controller at all. Thank you very much. And so finally I had to get a... I had to download, like, a keyboard emulator, I'd have to set it specifically for my controller. Like, A key is left key on the thing. Yeah. And, you know, I had to go to so much trouble.
It's incredibly annoying.
To mimic the console experience, and they didn't give it to me.
But why should they even have to? They should. It's a PC game. Make it. PC, like in this new one, you can't duck. There's no crouch key. You know, they got. There's no, like, you know, in traditional sort of first person shooters, you have the, you know, A, W, S, D, you know, keys. Okay, that's the same. But now they got. You know, you've got one key. One key runs with your character. One key ducks behind stuff, and one key. Like, it's all the one key. You got the same key to run as it is to interact with stuff, as it is to duck, basically. And it's incredibly annoying. Like, I want to have my control key be my crouch key. I want to have my E key be my interaction key. And I want I want another key to be jump, you know, and I want another key to be, duck behind stuff. I want four separate keys. But in here, it's one key to do everything. Like, why try to reinvent the wheel? This is not an Xbox. I'm using a PC. Fuck. But, you know, I'm dealing with it because the story is just so good. And the graphics are a step up than Mass Effect 1. And, the universe they created is really interesting. So, and they've got, oh, you know,
yep,
with Chuck? Well, the show I recommended to you, I don't know if you've got a chance to watch
No,
the first
not yet.
episode yet, but the main character, one of the main characters from Chuck, the hot blonde, Sarah, she's an Australian actress, and she is in Mass Effect 2. She plays the main woman in the game, I guess Miranda.
Oh, yes.
And she's using her Aussie accent and everything. And the same face, actually. They took her face and they put it in the game. Although her hair is black in the game and it's blonde in the TV show. But in the TV show, she puts on a fake American accent for some reason. But yeah, she uses her Aussie accent and
Okay,
everything.
well, that's very exciting, eh?
It is exciting.
My baby
Aren't
agrees.
you going to fly the Aussie flag?
I heard a Hong Kong skier hit his head and died at the Winter Olympics the other day. Well, a
Hong
Hong
Kong
Kong
skier?
athlete died at the Winter Olympics.
I don't think that. I've never heard that. Is it Hong Kong? I know on the Olympics are halfway through now, by the way. And they opened, they start, it's, we're recording on a Friday, and they opened a week ago today, basically. So it's been going on. And on the first day, last Friday, it wasn't, it was like a Georgian luger. He crashed on the
No.
track and got
Sorry,
killed.
there's a 14-year-old kid died skiing in South Korea. I was getting confused. Just as I saw Hong
Oh,
Kong
okay.
skier
Yeah, nothing
dies
to do
in
with.
accident, but yes.
No. No, I've been watching quite a bit of the Olympics and not watching every minute, but there's some good events. Bloody hockey game was on yesterday. The C Canadians played the Swiss. What an exciting game. Every bloody unbelievable. The Swiss forced forced the game into overtime. It was 2-2. Nobody scored, so they had to go to a shootout, and the Canadians won in the
And
shootout.
did you watch
It
the
was
curling,
incredibly
eh?
exciting. Against the Swiss, I couldn't believe it. No, I'm not watching curling. Watching a bit of the figure skating, just because the women in, hot outfits. It's on right now, actually. It's like the they're doing the tango, which is it's kind of funny because a lot of these figure skaters, like you have brother and sister teams, and they have to like act all hot when it's like doing the
Yes,
tango
yeah.
on the ice. But it's kind of sickening. But no, a lot of hot chicks in skimpy outfits. I'm watching a bit of that.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, the Olympics. It's a big event for Vancouver, just a few hours away.
Yep.
Showing the world what a great city it is. It's oh, very
Okay.
exciting.
Well.
Oh, speaking of Korea, did you see this thing? Doesn't your baby have a pacifier or
No,
something?
that was me. I was just saying, yeah, what thing?
Look at this. There's Korean activists target foreign English teachers. Yeah, well, you've got, I guess you got these Korean nationalists who are basically following foreign English teachers around, sort of stalking them, because they hear these, I don't know, urban legends, I guess, of these teachers who are nothing but perverts and going after, they're dating our women and dating their students. Sound familiar, Dane? We got and so what they've taken there, you got this group of these nut jobs. They're basically stalking foreign English teachers in Japan, following around, trying to see them. When they, do something bad, I guess. Here's the first couple lines here. This guy, this Korean guy, Yi Uwang, does a bit of investigative work in his free time. He uses the internet and other means to track personal data and home addresses of foreign English teachers across South Korea. He follows them often for weeks at a time, staking out their apartments and taking notes on their contacts and habits. He wants to know whether they're doing drugs or molesting children. He says he's trying to weed out troublemakers who have no business teaching students in South Korea or anywhere else. Yeah, I don't think there's a huge wave of foreigners you know, attacking people in Korea, but I guess they're paranoid. I don't think there's something like this in Japan. I mean, I've never heard of this before, though, you know, some foreign teachers get a bit of a reputation of, you know, ladies' men, but, I mean, this is ridiculous. So, yeah, it's over the top. And the the other thing I wanted to mention was the big news in the movie world, Gantz. Gantz is, as everybody knows, is going to become a live action movie, in live action Japanese movie, and there's been some developments. Big news for Gantz fans, as we all know, Gantz is sort of a bit of a salacious. I might have mentioned this in the previous show, actually. I don't quite remember, but in the first part of the manga, one of the main characters is Kay, the sort of hot high school girl. Well, in the movie, she's going to be an office lady, but apparently they're going to have full-on nudity in the Japanese live-action movie of this, and Kay is going to be a key component in that live-action movie. So we can all give three stars, apparently three cheers for nude Kay being in the Japanese live version of this, and they're not going to shy away from nudity, but she's not going to be a high school girl. She's going to be a office lady, young office lady. So I guess they're not going to have any problems with that. My only problem with this movie is I can't imagine it having a massive budget. So we'll have to wait and see. But I don't know if it's going to be a amazing, you know, Avatar-like $250 million budget and accompanying special effects. So, you know, Gantz is a pretty ambitious movie. So I don't see, you know, they can't really go cheap on the special effects if it's going to look right. So I don't know. We'll have to see. The other news, the Ghost in the Shell remake, not remake, the Ghost in the Shell live action DreamWorks movie is moving along. And the Shutter Island is coming out today. So this, as we said before, the scriptwriter behind Shutter Island is doing the script for the DreamWorks movie, DreamWorks version of Ghost in the Shell. So if you want to have an idea of what Ghost in the Shell might look like script-wise, take a look at Shutter Island. Now, Shutter Island right now is a 69% rating at Rotten Tomatoes. So, we'll see. But maybe is that because of Martin Scorsese, or is that because of the script? I don't know. So if you go see Shutter Island, pay attention to the dialogue, and tell me what, email us, tell me what you think. I might be seeing that Shutter Island too. It looks kind of good. They had a and had lots of commercials during the Olympics for that, so it's worth a look. The other development in the Ghost in the Shell front is so I guess there was an interview with that Shutter Island author or scribe, I guess. I can't pronounce her name. It's like, or his name. I don't know if it's a him or her. Oh, it's a woman. Laita Kalgridis. But she apparently is going to try and keep as faithful to the manga as possible. And on a similar line, the other big news in the last couple of weeks was new news on the Akira remake front. Version of that, they've also got a couple of writers for the Akira remake. Now, boy, who was the announced? I think if I remember correctly, it's a couple of hacks who haven't really done any good movies, and they also say they're going to remain faithful to the manga, the original manga. It's the Hughes brothers. Hughes Brothers in talks talks for Akira. Fresh from directing The Book of Eli, Alan and Albert Hughes are in talks with Warner Brothers to direct its live-action Akira, based on Katsuhiro Otomo's graphic novel. Studio's move to sign the Hughes Brothers comes 2 years after it acquired the rights with Legendary Pictures from publisher blah blah blah. With Appian Way's Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Davidson Kilgoren. The script has been penned by Mark Fergus and Hawk Oatsby. And is set in New Manhattan, a metropolis that was rebuilt after being destroyed 31 years earlier. So, apparently the Hughes Brothers' last project before Eli was From Hell. And apparently, I guess both of those movies were not very good. Eli came out last month. One guy there, Roper, liked it, but all the other reviews have been sort of mixed for that.
Well, From Hell was the Jack the Ripper one with Johnny the Depp.
Johnny the Depp.
With Johnny Depp, yes. And that was also based on a comic, not a Japanese one, obviously, but that was based on an Alan Moore comic, you know, Alan Moore of Watchmen and stuff. And obviously, Alan Moore disowns anything that he writes that gets turned into a film, or he disowns the film version, as he always has. And, it was okay, but...
Yeah, I saw it too. It was okay, but it was nothing special.
There was nothing special. Roger Ebert liked it.
So, I don't know. I don't know if this bodes well or not. The project is moving along. Whether that's good or not, I don't know. It depends how the movie turns out, and depends on the casting, and it's sort of a similar thing to Ghost in the Shell, you know. Just don't, I don't know, make an attempt at sort of acknowledging the roots of the story. Don't, like, steal the whole thing whole like Scorsese did with The Departed, you know. Steal the whole thing from Hong Kong. People who watched it didn't even know it was a Hong Kong movie, you know, originally, a complete remake. They didn't even acknowledge the script writers, you know, just a little tiny words, print at the end, buried in the credits, you know, thanks to these two Chinese guys for developing this, you know, script. So, I don't know. Fuck, it's sort of annoying. But you never know, we can't dismiss it, and a lot of people want to dismiss this outright right away, but I'm not willing to give up hope, you know.
Yep, well, I never had hope for that in the first place. So.
You've never had hope, man, as well.
Yes.
Speaking of Hong Kong, there's an interesting article. Valentine's Day was the same day as Chinese New Year, yes?
Yes, that's right.
That's right. It was the first time in like 50 years. So there was an article over at the Wall Street Journal about how couples are sort of clashing with family. So that the young couples want to celebrate Valentine's Day together, but you know, the old battle axe mothers are demanding their sons come go back home and visit family. So this story is basically, you know, it's sort of the tradition or young love sort of Sophie's choice that they have to, some of these guys have to meet. It's kind of funny.
Well, I think Valentine's Day is a huge crock of shit anyway, because it's just more another excuse for people to make money.
Yeah, well, yeah, invented by like the chocolate companies. This is the same thing in Japan, where the chocolate companies, you know, promoted Valentine's Day, and the women, you know, give chocolates. This is much, much better, actually. The women give chocolates to the men on Valentine's Day, which is very nice. So the marshmallow companies came up with White Day, trying to cash it, you know, 1 month later. It's on March 14th, where the men are supposed to return with, you know, with marshmallows. But the people forgot about the marshmallow bit, but the white day continued. So you've got on Valentine's Day the 14th, women are supposed to give chocolates to the men, and then a month later, the men are supposed to return the presents to the women. So, I don't know, it's all done by chocolate companies to prop up the industry, but I don't know, I thought it was an interesting article. You might want to link to it. We were talking about the Olympics earlier. There's a awesome panorama shot of Vancouver taken from helicopter, And somehow, you got one of those 360-degree sort of Google cameras in high res. So imagine that, but you're in a helicopter flying over the city. So it's like Google camera, but from a helicopter. So you're in this amazing overhead shot of Vancouver, and you're just like in Google Street View. Thank you, Google Street View. You can sort of move from place to place, seeing the view of the city as if you're flying over top. Full 360-degree, full color, high res, amazing shot of mostly False Creek and downtown Vancouver. It's very well done.
It's a very low rise city.
Yeah, well, it's downtown. Most of the places are limited to maybe about 30 stories at the most. Some go a bit higher.
I was told that Vancouver had become so much like Hong Kong that the apartments had become Hong Kong size and price. It was like, 500 square feet or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Downtown, sure, it's like that. But they have the height limits in order to protect, they call it view corridors, in order to protect the view of other people, of the mountains in the background.
No billboards
then?
They're
limited to, limited height-wise. Downtown, you can see here, a lot, some of them are maybe about 20, 30 stories. Some of them are getting a bit higher than that now. They're running low on space, but, yes.
Yeah, well, I would not... I just can't imagine going from Hong Kong, the most densely populated place, and then moving to Canada, and then living in a small apartment again in one of the most least densely populated places. It just seems like madness.
Vancouver is the second highest, has the second highest density in North America after New York City.
I know, but
people like Hong Kong and like the energy of living in an exciting city, and they want.
If you're used
to living in small apartments, you don't mind having a similarly sized apartment there. If you're moving from Alabama or something, some place that's like, or Saskatchewan, where you can have like huge apartments for like $5, then you probably you might be taken aback by what you get for your money. But if you're used to it, then
that's,
you don't care, I suppose.
Yes, well. I suppose if it's the flat barren tundras of Regina, Saskatchewan, then. Sorry, I just had to put a Regina reference in here.
Yes. A couple books I want to... I hope you link to that on the website.
Yeah.
There are a couple books I want to... Well, maybe at least one book I want to plug here. It's called The Victorian Internet. And I got this at the... I found this... I haven't read it yet, but it looks really interesting. It's a book about the telegraph. And how essentially it was like the Victorian version of the internet. Imagine before you had, essentially all you had was snail mail. And it was really snail mail then. And suddenly you've got instant communication to anywhere on the planet. Even though it's, by Morse code, but whatever. So it sort of compares the two phenomenon and how it revolutionized both worlds. And this is sort of like, if you like sort of steampunk, I suppose this might be that sort of same vein. There's even cases of long distance romances and two telegraph operators. One was a woman, one was a man, obviously, and they became sort of good chums over the telegraph, and they met in real life. Oh, they didn't know they were opposite sex until they met.
My goodness.
And they met and they realized, they became good friends of the telegraph, and they realized they're opposite sex and they got married.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? So
it's kind of like ham radio.
Well, you can't hear the voice. You got just Morse code,
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. That looks like a good book to read. So
could you just imagine Morse code sex? Beep, 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 beep.
That's right.
Anyway,
I've got a bunch of vintage links here that I thought you might find interesting. These are our viewers. Here's some vintage New Year's cards from Japan, 1937.
Oh.
You can see it's the kamikaze. kamikaze. I guess this was a type of plane. They called it the kamikaze.
Eternally interesting pink tentacle.
Mitsubishi Ki-15. And you got a whole bunch of vintage. But I thought was more interesting was actually the same line, vintage posters from Japan. So from the 1920s and 30s. Vintage sort of travel posters and, I guess, exhibition posters.
There's a kid here with the Japanese and Union Jack looking up at a plane.
Well, it's all plane-related because, that's the kamikaze. Yes. It's the name of the aircraft, the Mitsubishi Ki-15.
Well, I was just wondering why he had a Union Jack as well.
Well, don't forget, post-World War I, you know, even before World War I, Britain and Japan
were
allies.
World War I, Japan actually fought against Germany in World War I, so...
Yeah, okay,
no, that's always... everything
from... The second link I sent you was pretty good, too. It's sort of, it's posters from the 20s, 30s, and 40s from Japan again. Of different expos.
Oh.
It's pretty neat. Some good Art Deco.
Oh, wow. My parents would love that.
Some of these are pretty good, you know. I like these old Art Deco posters. I got a bunch from, you know, that were like travel posters.
As I've said, my parents were the chair people of the Art Deco Society of Australia, and they would love this sort of stuff.
Yeah. Well, posters, sort of gone out of, you don't see stuff like this anymore. I guess, you know, it's all, advertising is all, you know, it's all television and internet. But back then, you know, if you wanted to advertise, it had to be on a poster, so they really went to town, eh?
Yeah, I miss that. Well, okay, you've supplied a lot of interesting things, so then I will supply something interesting, and that is the 20 the 20 funniest figure skating faces, and these are all the funniest faces that, you know, funniest facial expressions taken during the current Winter Olympics figure skating, and I will send you the link right now. It's quite funny because I know, you know, it needs a lot of sort of diligence and attention and stuff.
That number one is the best.
Yeah, number one, and then I think number four is also.
We should describe it. It's not making great radio, but it's this guy. It's figure skating, so the man is holding the woman up over his head, almost imagine like an L, and the man is like straight up and obviously standing up. And the woman is sort of sticking out sort of perpendicular to his head. And her crotch is like right where his mouth is. So it looks like he's eating her out. And her back is sort of almost like arched in ecstasy. And her face is sort of, it looks like she's not quite in pain, but she looks a very interesting face. So yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
The second one looks a bit like a corpse.
The fourth and the fifth one are hilarious, and the sixth and the seventh one are scary in that they both look identical.
Some of these have got to be photoshopped. Number six was photoshopped. I'm sure.
I don't know. Well, I mean, because number six and seven look so alike, it's kind of scary.
I recognize. I think that's the Chinese couple, number one there. I watched some of these. I watched some of the pairs there, the couples.
And the guy number 11, he looks eternally scared. Number 12 He looks like he's, you know, awoke from the dead.
You can post a couple of these, at least link to it on the website.
Oh, yeah, this I'm saving all these links.
This is very visual, so for people, like, listening.
I know. It's a terrible thing to put on a radio show.
Well, since we're on this vein, I take a look at this is great. They call it vintage sexism. I got this annoying women on the rag website. I mean, feminist website. And
feministing.
Yeah, they're complaining about these old. It's like this 1938 dating guide for single women, and they're complaining about this advice. Okay, so they got here's some advice for women in 1938. Don't be familiar with the head waiter talking about the fun you had with someone else another time. Men desire your attention. Don't sit in awkward positions. Never look bored, even if you are. Be alert. And if you must chew gum, not advised, do it silently, mouth closed. Don't drink too much, as a man expects you to keep your dignity all evening. Drinking may make some girls seem clever, but most get silly. Don't be sentimental or try to get him to say something he doesn't want by working on his emotions. Men don't like tears, especially in public places. Careless women never appeal to gentlemen. Don't talk while dancing, for when a man dances, he wants to dance. I think most of this is common sense advice. And I think I think it's right. Don't be familiar, you know, don't flirt with the head waiter while you're on a date with somebody else. I mean, what's wrong with that advice? Try to pay attention to your date. You know, don't look bored, even if you are bored. You know, try to pay attention. I mean, what's wrong with that? Don't drink too much and get, you know, but all the women on the rag in the comment section, they're all freaking out. Oh, so sexist. How could they? It's common sense. Normal advice for people, even for men, you know, you should pay attention to your date and not look bored. I mean, what's wrong with any of this? It's kind of pissed me off. It's like that, I might have mentioned this in the previous show, but on another podcast, we had a bunch of women on. What's that podcast?
Three Moves Ahead.
Three Moves Ahead podcast. They had three women on, and they were talking about.
I actually thought it was two. I didn't realize that there were three there.
No, there were three. There's the one Laura there. Who's a blaring. She's a complete tomboy, raging. She was complaining about Bayonetta and how it's sexist.
That's right. And then saying how she loves to slaughter stuff, and she loves violence in her games, and typical.
Yeah, I was like, first of all, it's supposed to be the purpose of the interview is it's a strategy gaming podcast, and it's supposed to be the premise of the show was why aren't women into strategy games? Like, why is it mostly men who play, Civilization and Europa Universalis? Why aren't women interested in that? And she dismissed the whole premise of the show. This Laura chick, she went on, well, I don't think that's true. I think people just like what they like, and everybody has different interests. And this whole topic is meaningless. Let's move on. So she essentially dismissed the whole premise of the show, and went on to complain about sexism in video gaming. And it really pissed me off.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yes, well. And then they get angry if you...
Well, I made a post in the... a couple posts in the forum about it. And I actually provoked a response from her. It was... It's episode 48. If people are interested, episode 48 of the Flash of Steel is the website.
Yeah, we link to it in our main website, which is animepacific.blogspot.com.
Yeah, and I'm going to read a bit from. Should I read a bit from my
yes,
post?
Yes, certainly.
Okay, here we go. So here's what I put. I'm posted under Alex2000. A bunch of comments in this show annoyed me, but I'll keep it short. Tom's ragging on Bay. It wasn't Tom, by the way. I made a mistake there. It was Laura. Ragging on Bayonetta for setting the hobby back or some such BS. Look, in Hollywood, you get Chinatown and American Pie. ESPN has the NFL and women's beach volleyball. Computer games can have Dragon Age and Bayonetta. What the fuck is it with Americans killing God knows how many people in games? Over-the-top gore, decapitations, blood, all no problem, but some over-the-top sexuality, and that crosses the line already. Whip out your Bibles. I am married, 33 years old, and I like my TNA in games just fine, thank you. One of those women commented, oh, it's only teenagers who want TNA in their games. Ugh, so annoying. One of the ladies complained about underdeveloped female characters in games. Well, look, it isn't as if there are tons of well-developed male characters in games either. I don't recall Duke Nukem having Shakespearean levels of depth, do you? Do you honestly think a Larry Croft would have been any more well-developed than Lara Croft was? Are any of the male characters in Borderlands better developed than Lilith? Please. Dragon Age, as pointed out in the show, is different, of course. But then again, all the characters are well-developed. It's a great story. I'm over 70 hours into the game and loving every minute of it. But if we're up to Tom and the other killjoys around here, Lyanna's sexy leather armor and my female mage's robes would be Burka-like in their modesty. Well, no thank you. So I let him have it, and I got a response from this Laura chick, sort of defending position. And Troy defends it too. He says, oh, there actually are well-developed male characters. And he points to the silent hero. He points to the Prince of Persia games and to Solid Snake.
Yeah, Solid Snake.
Solid Snake? I mean, come on, it's still a biscuit shooter. She defends herself with regard to my... I don't think she's... this Laura chick says, I have nothing wrong with the use of sexuality and beauty in video games. In fact, I welcome it because I think it'd rather help build a narrative... and she says she'd rather look at Nathan Drake's butt for 15 hours than Mickey Rourke's. But she says she's off-put by games that use hypersexuality. Sex should be not the... But that's basically not what she really said in the show, you know? Forget all that. I'm going to read my other post here. Because I think I worked hard on some of this stuff, and I'm going to...
Let it be known.
Here's Nick. Yes. Lost has scenes of Eugene Kim and Evangeline Lilly walking around in the bikini or half naked. The women on CBS's Survivor spend half their time in swimming suits. Spend all their time in swimming suits. Do only teenage boys watch Survivor? No. Do men only watch it to see hot chicks in bikinis? No. Is it the only reason I watch the show? No, but I do like it, of course. If yours is a quest for balance, making Alan Wake into an equally unsexualized Jane Wake, I'd have no issues. But there is no need for a jihad against sexy chainmail armor. That's another point. Like, the complaint, you know, like Lyanna, she has her sort of leather sort of skirt and her sort of leather top when she's a rogue, you know. I mean, what's wrong with that? I love HBO's Deadwood and the Wire, but I also love cheesy TNA shows like Survivor. All right, I'm going to scroll down a little bit. Tom defends himself a little bit, says he likes TNA games.
Didn't she sort of launch slightly something against anime? Sort of saying how anime was too...
Oh, that's right. That was the other thing. You know, she doesn't like anime. She says that, the women in anime are I don't know. I can't quite remember what she said. She said she didn't like the characterization of women in anime or in Japanese games, which are essentially like anime. One of the girls said she liked the characterization of women in anime games. She said essentially archetypes. I think was it, she didn't quite say it like this, but she basically said the women are archetypes. So you've got like the tsundere type anime chick, and you've got the the more sort of passive anime chick, you know, you got different sort of archetypes, typical archetypes, which Laura, you know, unless she's like a modern American woman, then nothing will suit her.
Basically, I think that woman was not the smartest, the sharpest, or had the best argument.
Well, she's apparently supposed to be a legitimate game journalist, but...
Well, then hell, why can't I be?
Yeah. She Okay, here's something else.
Why can't Paul Acuna be then?
Yeah, that's right. So here's what she, changing gears slightly. A couple of times during the podcast, Tom is one of the hosts of the show. Tom tried to go in an interesting direction with the ladies, but was stymied by somewhat ludicrous answers. I forget the exact words, but Tom tried to bring up innate differences between the genders and what that might mean for games and game developers. This key area for discussion was completely shut down by the ladies' answer, paraphrasing, that there are no innate differences, that people just like what they like, and that any differences between the genders exist for cultural reasons. Nothing to see here. Move along. I mean, what? I guess I had better email all those scientists working on early childhood development and tell them to put down their pens and pack things up. Laura has declared the age-old nature versus nurture debate over. That raging debate you've been having for decades, if not centuries, is over. Laura says it's nurture. You can all go home. Tom tried very gently to press the ladies on this. I think he was as incredulous as I was, but was too polite to push very hard. He brought up strategy games and The Sims, but dropped the issue without pressing much. At one point, he finally said to one of the girls, Tom, the tomboy, I think, see, I think you are an outlier. The everyone is born the same, but just grow up to like different things, banalities continued. And then Tom dropped the issue. Look, this is a key issue and would have led to an interesting discussion. What is a girl game? What makes a good girl game? How can you make strategy games more appealing to women? But this was practically shut down because of the both the sexes are the same people, just like different things line.
Yeah.
Someone had better...
I'm just saying, as an educator myself, I could say that a lot of her arguments are, at least in my opinion, are quite crap. Because...
Well, somebody posted a bunch of links to actual research that it's crap. You know?
Yes.
Someone had better tell Hollywood that their romantic comedies and Twilight aren't chick flicks. Nothing to see here. Move along. Look, guys, it's an interesting topic that deserves another shot. Bring in some really girly girls, some Grey's Anatomy, Titanic, Twilight fans, you know, actual girls. They might have to be new to gaming. Sit them in front of some strategy games. Maybe The Sims, the movies, Rise of Nations and Panzer General. Maybe throw in a couple of non-strategy games like Dragon Age and Bayonetta. Ask them to talk about if they liked or disliked each game and why. What aspect of the game did you like, assuming they didn't play much before they asked, and why not?
Well...
her only point, and some other guy here agreed with me, and pointed out to all this research that says that you know, that's basically, it is, a lot of it is nature, and it is genetically girls like some things.
It's absolutely, because I see this psychology in very young kids all the time, you know, like I said, as a teacher, kids, you know, you give kids something to draw, boys are inevitably going to draw robots and fighting, and girls are inevitably more, at least when 99% of the time, going to draw, you know, fairies and picnics and nice stuff, and it's just, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I read at Slate Magazine, on my magazine, they had an article just out a couple of days ago that was complaining about the figure skating, and that the women in figure skating are hurting women because they dress up to... Like princesses and too much glitter and sparkle and stuff that they should be more, you know, I guess androgynous, essentially, is what they're saying. It's giving little girls, figure skating bad for little girls was the argument. And it's like, because figure skating, you know, it's about dresses and dancing and looking pretty, and they should be in sports like women's ice hockey.
Why don't they attack
that,
the modeling industry instead? That's far more.
Oh, there's plenty of that at Slate. Don't worry. You go to all these blogs, like websites, like the Slate sister site there, Double X Factor, and there's always complaints about women modeling, and you know, it just never ends.
Yes.
But you know, figure skating hurts girls. What a bunch of crap.
Now let's talk about Queen Gorgos in 300, because we haven't talked about that yet. And okay, no, sorry.
that's our usual. Actually, you know, this makes... There was another article on Slate, and the title is Lars von Trier a Misogynist? and it lists a bunch of his movies, complain and sort of the complaints about how his portrayal of women in these movies. One is Dancer in the Dark. It won an award in France at the at Cannes, I guess. Another one, Antichrist, is opened, I guess, in October. And it's complaints about the portrayal of women. I guess in Antichrist, a couple known as he and she journey to a remote cabin in the woods after the death of their toddler son, only to have their wife descend into nymphomania, insanity, and gruesome violence and self-mutilation. And Dancer in the Dark stars Bjork, who goes blind, is robbed, and is terrorized into committing murder and hanged. So and in Dogville, Nicole Kidman's Grace is collared into an iron flywheel, repeatedly raped. Later, she oversees the summary execution of an entire town.
Doesn't sound very nice.
And in Breaking the Waves, perhaps Von Trier's mostly widely acclaimed film, Emily Watson's saintly, church-going Bess is effectively fucked to death. I can't believe they used fucked in this article. It makes me want to see these movies, man. It sounds interesting. Here's a director I can get behind, so, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, who says our show what? Isn't...
But don't you think what that director's featuring in his films is a little bit terrible?
No, it's all great. I want to see. I'm sure they're very provocative and it's all very interesting.
Well, you
artsy.
See, okay, maybe I should make my opinion more transparent. Is that I'm certainly not a misogynist. In fact, I usually hold women to higher esteem. Than men. No, I'm serious here, in that I really, what I don't like is people who think that the mere act of being a woman is sexist, or is somehow instilled in women. You know, I shouldn't like pink. You know, those.
Yeah,
sort of
yeah,
girls.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And Hong Kong has a lot of androgynous girls, maybe because the girls outnumber the boys in Hong Kong, where in China it's quite the opposite. But I see so many of these sort of sexual voids, I suppose you could say, where there's these girls who, they're like, you know, it's Pat, basically. They do this on purpose. They strap their boobs in, wear
well,
a
all right,
suit.
But
they just try to look totally neutral.
No, I don't mind. That's fine, but as long as people who go the opposite route aren't like called like not real women or called like the Slate article complaining about figure skating, how they're hurting women by being too, you know, girly.
I you know, we babysit this very nice little girl and yeah, well, you know, what Connie does, and I help when I get home. And, you know, we're at the shopping centre, and I said, okay, well, you want to get a magazine, which one? And she could have got anything, but she got Disney Princess. And Disney Princess is by far the number one child's magazine.
See, I bet you that would probably be banned in America for being anti- for
Well, Disney girls. Princess is just so popular, at least here. And you know they've got a sort of a weekly or a monthly magazine, which seems to be a huge hit. And you know, it's that, you know, girls like that stuff. I mean, this is what I really oppose.
Yeah, but apparently they're not allowed to like it. That's my key complaint. That in America they're not allowed.
And then that's why they talk about,
according to Laura,
you know, boobies in
Laura Krieger.
Yeah.
Laura Krieger, apparently they're not, everybody has to be has to just,
yeah.
Girls can't be girls, they have to be essentially boys.
And men that look at girls are just teenagers.
Oh,
and
they're
they'll,
sex is
yeah,
pigs.
They'll get
yes.
over it.
That's right. That's
oh,
right.
You'll get over it once you
that's
hit
right,
18.
That's right.
I mean, the porn industry is only worth a few billion dollars. And,
that's
but,
right.
Yeah, I...
And shows like Baywatch and games like Bayonetta aren't allowed to exist because, you know, women aren't wearing burkas.
Burkas. Yes. So, anyway, that was a nice bit of venom. And I think,
yes.
On that note...
That was a very chaotic opening segment. I think we probably should just do a very quick what we're watching segment, and then that'll be that.
Yes,
show,
yes.
I think.
no, we are still... You know, we've been on holidays and stuff.
But I had all these... It was very chaotic, but I had all these links building up over the past few weeks I wanted
yep.
to mention on the show. I just sort of threw them all out
oh, yeah,
real
yeah.
quick. And by the way, George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones is still proceeding along. Apparently, the pilot was seen by HBO, and according to the website Winter is Coming... HBO reaction to the screening was not positive, not positive, which is very, which is unnerving, and it's generated 134 comments on this website. So
that is unnerving, very unnerving.
But you know, it's just a pilot, so maybe they just want to retool it a bit, and you know, we'll see. I guess
one can hope.
All right, so let's move on to the next segment because this is dragging on too long and we want to play some
okay.
Rome.
Hey, gang. Check out what other people have had to say about the Alpha Paddle podcast.
But anyway, it's all subjective and
it's
pointless to argue about this. And then Kent from Upper Paddle will say, well, excuse me, but I think bobbity bobbity baba, and then... It'll go on forever.
Wait, that wasn't really that good. What else have people been saying about me? Kent is a prick.
Yeah, if you could like lock Kent in the bathroom or something, then it'd be fun.
Kent from Up a Paddle. Wow, I've been going for 3 years and that's the best I can do. But if you're morbidly curious or just can't get enough of anime, video game, or movie podcasts, check me out at UppaPaddle.com, that's UPAPADDLE.com, or search for Up a Paddle in the iTunes directory. The Up a Paddle Podcast. Not really that good of a podcast.
What are we watching?
Thanks.
Okay, so... what we're watching, in my case, what I've downloaded but have yet to watch. Although I did watch the very, what is credited to being the first OVA ever made, but I think that is actually Lolita, believe it or not. But I watched Delos, which is the OVA, not the compiled film version. Mamoru Oshii's OVA that he directed in 1983, what they say is the very first OVA ever made, and I saw that, and I will be reviewing that in Regan's show.
Ah.
So, so stay tuned for, I think it'll probably be the next, or the one after the next one, I don't know when, Anime 82. So check that out, and Regan also kindly let me know that Dirty Pair, the absolute classic TV show and sort of quite a phenomenon in the 80s, has finally been fully subbed. The TV series Dirty Pair finally fully subbed.
Yes, and indeed.
I got that. Haven't watched it yet, though.
Well, I have downloaded the next few episodes of Durarara, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet because I've just been absorbed with Mass Effect and Dragon Age. And the TV I have been watching is basically American TV shows like Lost, which is back on the air and it's awesome. Season 6, the final season, is on. And the first episode was great. Second episode was not so good. Third episode was sensational. And Survivor is back on, season 20, Heroes versus Villains. What excitement. Russell's back, and it's great. So I have not had a chance to watch any anime over the last 3 weeks, unfortunately. I apologize. Now, in the comments, Jake the Rootbeer Kieran wanted to know if I had seen Seikan no Quasar yet. And unfortunately, I have not.
Nor I.
Well, we said that was one of the things we wanted to watch, but I don't know if I can watch regular definition, show now. I mean, the one that's in HD is the one that's broadcast on over the airwaves, free to air television, and it's heavily, heavily censored. Now, I don't know if I'd watch a show just for the fan service, but if it's going to be there, I'd like to see it,
Well, this censorship issue is something that's coming up quite a bit these days, and to an extent, and I kind of agree with this to a certain extent, it's kind of a ploy to make more money on Blu-rays and DVDs.
Yes.
And there was this show called Gare Zero, which someone said, oh, it's the best show ever, you got to download it. So I downloaded it, it's only 12 episodes, and I watched the first one, and this is not anything sexual or anything like that being censored, it was just sort of violence. And this show was censored to such a ridiculous degree that I just found it unwatchable. And just the very fact that they used that as a gimmick kind of made me not want to watch, the uncensored version either. And that is that basically whenever sort of like a special forces group fighting monsters, and whenever anyone would get killed by the monster, they'd sort of cast a shadow over the guy getting killed. So you'd see the monster sort of slash, and then you'd sort of see this shadow cast, and you couldn't see what was going on. They basically blacked over all the violence. And I didn't realize that there were two versions, but then I looked it up online, and sure enough, I saw a screenshot comparison, and it is really it is really censored. In fact, I would like to see if I can find a screenshot comparison here, because it's just ridiculous. Although I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it.
Well, it's the same thing with Seikan no Quasar, because there have been uncensored. There's an uncensored version available, but it's only in standard definition. It's not in HD.
I've just sent you a link of a screenshot comparison to Gare Zero, and I will post that in the show notes. But yes, go on, Stigma no Quasar.
Yeah, so like if you want to see it uncensored, you have to watch the regular definition. But, I'm not that desperate to see it. It's not like Darker Than Black or something where I got to see it right away. I'm happy to wait for the Blu-ray version to come out, and I'll just watch it when the Blu-ray version comes out. I'm not in a big hurry. But I asked Jake if it's worth it seeing right away, and he says, yeah. He said that it's good quality, 480p. First two episodes are a bit pixelated. He suggests checking it out now and not waiting for Blu-ray. But, I've got so much stuff to watch that I haven't seen yet, that why download something that's just going to sit in my hard drive for later anyway? So I might as well just wait for the Blu-ray. This show looks interesting. I've never heard of this. Another show that you should have told me about and you didn't. Guy Raised Ears. Is it any good?
I only saw the first episode, but it certainly...
Oh, so you never downloaded the
I downloaded the whole series, and then I deleted it when I saw the extent of the censorship.
You didn't download the uncensored version, is what you're saying.
No, and I said that gimmick, and you can probably get a sense of what I'm talking about by looking at the comparisons, right? You see how they just cast a shadow.
Now, it's not nudity, I should point out. It's all violence and gore, basically.
Well, I mean, I suppose seeing as someone who always... is always you know, commenting on how ridiculous it is that people focus on censoring sexual stuff and not violent stuff. I shouldn't complain, but still, yes, it's all violence. And but I watched the first episode, and
was it any good?
Well, you know, first episodes are difficult because they're like any, they're like pilot. You know, if
we call
an episode a pilot heavy, and that is that they're just deliberately trying to showcase what the show's going to be about. So if it's about ninjas and monsters and whatnot, there are going to be ninjas and monsters in that episode, and it's going to be a bit of an assault to the senses, but the show seemed like, you know, it had potential, and lots of people liked it. So, I think...
Well, I'm going to have to put this on my to-watch list.
I can at least say it's definitely for older audiences.
But I see this Guy Ray thing, and it looks like it's shonen. The Enchanted Spiritual Beast Guy Ray, is that it? It looks like a schoolgirl show. This must be a different show. Guy Ray Zero... All right. Well, I'll have to look into it. You'll have to do. Are you going to watch any more of it, or have you bailed?
Well, like I said, I mean, I was quite annoyed at the extent of which it was censored. It just put a bad taste in my mouth. But I'll probably check it out.
It must be out on Blu-ray by now.
The uncensored one is out. Although the one I downloaded was standard definition, and I couldn't seem to find a high definition one.
I see there's a DVD version.
But, there are lots, like, in America now, they're starting to release shows on Blu-ray. So, and as someone with a Blu-ray player, this is exactly what I was talking about. This is what can get me buying more anime instead of, you know, getting fan subs and stuff, is now I can get it in the most superior format possible. I mean, still 1080p. I know it might not be that much different, but it's still better than 720p, and that's, as someone who is extremely anal about resolutions and stuff, that means quite a lot to me. But
I gotta get a Blu-ray player as well. You got a PS3, so
yes.
You must be excited that the PS3 was finally hacked.
Well, you know, it for homebrew, yes. I'm sure there'll be some cool stuff you can do with it, but at this stage,
They said it was going to be unhackable, and it was, basically. And maybe still is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to come out of this, but we shall see.
Should we move on to a short email segment? Because I think Reagan sent us a voicemail.
Oh, yes. I was going to play that as the opener for the show. But if you want to actually introduce it, we can.
All right. So email coming up next.
Stop. Oh, yes. Wait a minute. Mr. Postman.
So, here we are at the email. I have to say that this time a few weeks ago, I was saying, you know what, Alex, I just got so much on my plate, baby, degree, work, studying, etc., etc., and I said, maybe I should hang up the podcasting microphone, although a microphone is not something you would hang up, but what has at least... postponed that is the support from my delightful fellow podcasters and fans. One was a song from Regan, which he certainly has a gift, because it was he sent a very hilarious song titled Binu Sensation. And just a standard disclaimer here, Binu is our friend and one of Anime
Even though he's... That's right.
One of our first earliest benefactors, and it's all in good fun, and I'm sure Binu knows that, because I will always give my big thumbs up to Binu and Anime Genesis.
That's right. We're not prejudiced against Moe pervs at all. That's right.
Okay. Yes. And, of course, we all have been eternally talking about, oh, well, you know, we should probably make another promo at some stage. And then Fight Bait, the delightful Fight Bait, made one for us.
That's right. So thank you. I don't know if you should post that on the website somewhere so fellow podcasters can play it on their shows.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, yeah, certainly. And I'll also play it some point. So big thanks to Fight Bait for that one.
Yeah, and we're going to play Regan's Binu Vibration song at the end of the show. So make sure you stay tuned for that.
Yes.
But there's one thing. But while we're in break here, you mentioned let me rephrase that. At the Anipak website, we got another response to a Motoko, who should play Motoko in the Ghost in the Shell movie.
Yeah.
And somebody recommended the Legend of the Seeker actress, Tabret Bethel. Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, I just wanted to mute myself sneezing, and then I muted it, and then unmuted myself for the sneeze. Force of habit. Lovely. Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Well, anyway, yeah, so that's an interesting suggestion. Legend of the Seeker is a pretty horrible show.
It's a pretty awesome show, yes.
And the actress, yeah, she's pretty hot, although she's not exactly famous.
No, I watched Legend of the Seeker religiously, and having seen that reference, I could certainly.
You could almost put up with the movie. Yeah, you'd put up with the movie just because you like that actress. Oh, I see.
She has the persona, or perceived persona, to pull off Motoko.
She's got a bit of a an exotic look to her too, I suppose. But if you're gonna have her, why not put Kristen Crook?
Well, I suppose at the end of the day is that if you're really scratching the obscure TV barrel, then hell, why not a very famous Asian actress, which is always going to be my first guess. Yes. My first choice. I mean, one very interesting thing, which I thought was a very good idea, is that the producers, I'm just trying to remember the name of this film. It starred Rain, you know, the singer Rain, and it was an R-rated ninja film, which came out Ninja Assassin, that's right. And Ninja Assassin was a 2009 film about ninjas, starring Rain, who is, you know, one of the biggest stars, well, I suppose in Asia, but by extension by the world. I remember he was Time Magazine's Man of the Year, and did a few funny things on the Stephen Colbert Show. But he made a film called Ninja Assassins. And why is this relevant? Because it was modestly budgeted, but I think, you know, by the standards of it was budgeted about, you know, 30 million or something, or 20, which might not sound like a lot, but for any sort of non-Hollywood production, it is quite a lot. Although this is, I think it's kind of an American production. But they said, okay, return to the R-rated action movie, which is always good because it's sad, but they're quite scarce these days. And they said, okay, well, $30 million budget. Rain is huge in Asia, so, I mean, this can definitely make money back in Asia, and hopefully, you know, people like ninjas, so it'll make money in America too. So I just thought that was a good model to work off. And, you know, casting Rain as the lead. And, you know, made about $40 million in America. And, I don't know how much it made sort of globally, but I think, you know, judging by his success in Korea, at least, you know, it certainly would have made money anyway. So
I think your baby's being tortured in the background.
No,
she's like, I can picture her spinning wildly like a top on the floor or something and knocking stuff over.
No, she's in one of those little walkie machines, and she's just having fun.
I see. Well, yeah, okay, well, that's interesting. Although, you know, I saw Kristen Crook, she's in Chuck now. She's been in the last few episodes as a love interest for Chuck. So she plays this really geeky, sweet, non-power chick girl. She's like a bit of a nerd and into computers and very sweet and demure and all around nice girl. So you gotta watch Chuck, man, because it's a great show. And when you get to season three, you catch up with this Kristen Crook arc. I think you'll fall in love with her because she's just so nice in this.
Okay, I will chuck it out.
That's right. All right, that's very funny. I want to point out that Jake the Root Beer King made a comment in our comment section for the last episode that I think is worthy of pointing out in the email section. So I'm going to read this.
Yep.
He's referring to Chubra, and I want your reaction to this, Dane.
Yep.
All right. So this is what Jake says. I'm up to episode 4 of Chubra. Maybe I'm weird, but I don't really see the perversion. Like Alex pointed out, the show actually takes underwear quite seriously, so I'm not really getting the "we're making a show for lolicon otaku to jack off to" vibe. That would make me uncomfortable. I mean, if you're perverted enough to automatically associate seeing a girl, especially an underaged one, in her underwear with sex, then that's your problem, not the show's. I see this as more of an educational show for young girls. Which begs the question, and why are you watching?
Yes. Yeah.
Not really sure. I mean, there's some funny moments, and I guess the whole novelty of a show about an underwear club interests me. But again, not in any fan servicey way. I'm probably going to stick with it until the end, again, just for the novelty of the underwear club. I want to see how... Okay, I'm going to stop reading, because this guy's he's insane. Again, if it's an it's not an educational show for young girls. There's no young girls watching this to learn about underwear. Who is he kidding? I mean, the only way this show is going to work is if it's a goofy, over-the-top, golden boy, colorful type show. And it's not. It's too serious. And if it's an educational show, they should be showing it in schools, teaching girls how to wear underwear. I mean, it's so the whole premise of the show is stupid. And who is he fooling? Go ahead.
Well,
foist him on his own petard there, Dean.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll still watch another episode of it. I've only seen the first one. But, I think the thing was that I just felt a little creeped out because all the girls seemed a little bit too young in the show.
Yes, exactly. And what about his point that, if you're perverted enough to automatically associate seeing a girl in her underwear with sex, that's your problem, not the show. Well,
yes, yes.
Yeah, see, actually, Jake is not the perverted one for watching a show about 10-year-olds walking around in her panties. It's your problem because you associate that with sex.
Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck? He's delusional. I'm surprised he didn't get more of a reaction in our comment section. Look, if this had been a show about 17-year-olds, it'd be fine. But it's not. It's wrong. End the story. It's not educational. There's no 12-year-old girls watching this for education reasons. Who is he kidding? Anyways, that's the end of that. He's fucking crazy.
Okay, yes.
So, and I'd like to thank Rigo, whoever that is, for I think his first and last post telling us to hurry up and release a new show. It's always nice to hear from new listeners, people who have not sometimes you get the feeling that we're shouting out a window and nobody's really listening to us except for like Jake and Regan, who always post. I mean, there's nobody else. But we actually hear from somebody new and there's actually people listening, it gives us a burst of energy to keep recording.
I mean, you know, and the download numbers counter at archive.org has not been working, and
it won't work for like 5 days, and then it'll restart for 3 days, and it, you know, stops working again.
But you know, the other thing is that okay, fine, this episode, wow, 600. This episode, 150. But they're just numbers. We don't hear from the bulk of those people, and you just wonder if it is just numbers, you know.
Right. So if you please email us at napacific@gmail.com, and check out our website at anapacific.blogspot.com. We like hearing from you. And that's episode 89. We'll try to be on time with the next one. So please talk to us.
Yep.
Now remember, let's keep listening for Regan's amazing song. What's it called? Binu something.
Yes,
Binu
yes.
Vibration. Yes, that's right. And my campaign to have Binu as a verb / noun / adjective is still carrying on, so please feel free. Binu things up. So Chubra, very Binu. All right, moving along. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Yo, it's your boy Regan Strongblood, better known as MC Gold Lightning on the microphone. I'm here on a mission to bring a brand new definition. It's the underage rage, and we turn the page. Yo, we're singing it loud, forget about that MOA crowd. We got a new thing rocking the otaku generation. Yo, I'm on a new mission to give Bino a brand new definition. You might think, yeah, I know, the drunk surfing boy, that Latino. Yo, it's time that we face it. It's time to go up to a new dual matrix. Alex, he don't give a fuck. The boy is a Nazi Canuck. Binu vibration, it's such a Binu sensation. It's such a Binu vibration. It's such a Binu sensation. Hey Alex, I'm a little perplexed. Personality is flat as your girlfriend's chest. Dane, yo, he's jolly and he's mellow. The boy wishes that his skin was yellow. He came to Alex when he's jacking up on the train. He thought of Dane, who used to show his main vein to all the lady dick boys down the lane. He used to drive the boy insane. Yo, cream lemon's got nothing on us. Come on, move it, move it. Strawberry marshmallow. Binu vibration. It's such a Binu sensation. It's such a Binu vibration. It's such a Binu sensation. Yo, Binu was born on a fateful day when Dane started his technical cosplay. Yo, I don't think it's cool. Kidnap the girl and marry from your school. Man, you know that's whack. Binu vibration confirmed the anti-pack. Binu means when something's creepy and uneasy. It's kinda like Alex, you know he's sleazy. Binu was born on that fateful day. I remember the horror. I found I was jacking off to Toradora. Binu vibration. It's such a Binu sensation. It's such a Binu vibration. It's such a Binu sensation.
So basically, if something's moe, something's kind of creepy, uneasy, you know, on the verge of being kind of like, you know, something Alex would be into. Instead of saying, like, that's so moe, now you say, that's so Binu. So it's the new generation. It's the new definition. It's so Binu. Don't forget to listen to Anime 82, baby. Cheap plug.
Yo, Alex, put your dick back in your pants.
Say me, they don't know me, but they take me and they throw me in the back of the car for me, Binu. They said they say me, they don't know me, but they take me and they throw me in the back of the car for me, Binu. You know?
Binu vibration. It's such a Binu sensation. It's such a Binu vibration.
Okay, guys, I'll add a little reggae just for fun on the end here, okay? In a better time, I just like Ganja Gabon. Try fire herb and I give a man some. Sounds in the playmates and a vibe beat the wrong. Respect the old miss and we respect the young. Daddy Regan, man, you are the mic champion. When you grab the mic and I just can't on. Ooh, rag a muffin, you're the done Irishman. Number one in a Canada, man.
Yo, it's Binu, baby, and you just can't stop. Like I said, cream limits got nothing on us. It's the underage rage. Full credit to Alex from Anime Pacific. It's so Binu it hurts. This is MC Gold Lightning saying, get Beano, or get the hell out. Yo, Alex, full credit to you. I know you Beano all over your pants every time you watch those Moe shows, so big up. Good job on the definition. I know that you got those long nights on the train. Sometimes you need cream lemon to drain the vein. It's alright. I know you Beano on your pants when you watch Super Milk Chan. It's okay. Big ups, Alex. You're the king of Beano. Yo! It's Beano Pacific, baby!